Trying to create COVID-19 tests is a combination of complicated science and complicated business. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. The U.S. has faced an ongoing shortage of tests for COVID-19, the disease caused by the new coronavirus. Testing availability varies widely by state. In New York City, the hardest hit area of the U.S. so far, doctors are only offering tests to people with severe symptoms. The initial test used in the United States was created by the Centers for Disease Control, and it wasn't always accurate. It was also only allowed to be used by state-run health departments. Without testing, we can't tell how many people might have the virus but not be showing symptoms. We can't predict the next outbreak or even trace how the virus is spreading. So scientists and biotech companies around the country are working furiously to create alternate tests. One of those people is Jacqueline Linus, a professor of biomedical engineering who runs a lab at Purdue University. She's created a COVID-19 test, and she told me the science is complicated, but getting from lab to market is even harder.
There's a difference between getting a test to work in the lab 5, 10, or even 100 times, and then getting it to a point that's manufacturable at scale that we need. And a lot of times when these are in development, the exciting part is getting the actual sensing to work. And so there's lots of really cool sensing techniques that are out there that actually are not deployable at all. And so there's a big disconnect between what is manufacturable at scale and what is actually getting made in the lab. Right. For us, if we are developing a device and we're able to publish a paper on it, we're super excited. And it's only after that that we come back and look at it and realize, oh, this has way too many layers and alignment issues. Getting that discussion with manufacturers in the process is really critical. In companies that are doing manufacturing, it still takes a lot to switch from what they're currently developing to developing a whole new set of biology and reagents, and then getting that switched onto their existing platform. Even that is difficult.
Right. So is this changing the development process at all? Like, is it unusual for example, a university to be in conversation with a manufacturer at the same time as the research is happening?
It shouldn't be, but I think that, yes, it is unusual for this. It has certainly sped up things in my lab as far as developing technologies with manufacturing in mind. And it's been beneficial, I think, so that we can reframe how we're developing these devices and focus on how we're not just going to make a cool device, but how it's actually going to go from the lab into usability.
So wait, you said it shouldn't be. Like, do you think that should have been the norm all along?
In an ideal world, it would be the normal all along.
Yeah.
So in academia, we tend to be thinking about, you know, not just what functions now, but what can we make function in 5 or 10 years, and sort of hope that the other side of the manufacturing will have caught up by then. That disconnect has been existing, and we are rapidly realizing that that is not how it should be.
Are you saying that the lack of that coordination from before pandemic is contributing to a slower rollout of testing now?
Despite a number of people that have argued that we should be doing this all along, most research labs have paid no mind and have continued working on things that are much sexier than manufacturing the devices.
Got it. Is money a part of that? Like, has there not been funding for the not very sexy parts?
Always. I think that when we're submitting proposals and they undergo peer review, people get really excited about the innovative new biosensor, and they're not very excited about the mundane development processes to get things out into the world. The way that we're even reviewing each other is contributing to that.
Hmm. Is it the province of universities and research labs to do that work in the first place? Like, could that work on the boring stuff have been happening at the government level, ideally?
That is a great question. And I think that Valley of Death is something that nobody's quite figured out whose job it is. Companies are out there scouting for potential technologies, but the further along the universities can get them, the better. because it's a risk for them to translate something out of a lab into the company. Mm-hmm. I know at our university, we have a roll-to-roll manufacturing facility that's specifically designed to help make that transition. So people are thinking about it, and we're still figuring out the best place for it.
Jacqueline Linus is a professor of biomedical engineering who runs a lab at Purdue University. As of last week, the U.S. has tested about 0.1% of the population. And now for some related links. Like so many things about this pandemic, it's kind of hard to tell what is and isn't true about testing. Several companies have been promoting at-home testing kits, but then the FDA came out and basically said you shouldn't use them. The at-home swabbing is super difficult, so it's easy to screw up. The samples can be compromised by human error and then being sent through the mail, and all of that can result in false negatives. Then there are reports of a test that takes just 15 minutes to get results instead of the hours or days required by other tests. That's apparently messy because it's not sensitive enough. It can only detect about 60% of cases. And there are a lot of people out there who think they might have already had COVID-19, and they want to take an antibody test to find out. Those tests are starting to roll out, but Business Insider notes, we still don't know if people can get reinfected or not. So basically, still kind of a mess. Scientific American has a good roundup of what's available where and how the most common tests work. If you feel like reading up on how biotechnicians scan a nasopharyngeal sample using a reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction, hey, listen, I know some of you have a lot more time these days. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.